District of Conservation is sponsored by the Committee for a Constructive Tomorrow, better known as CFECT. To learn more about our sponsor, head over to CFECT.org. Thanks for listening to the program. Welcome to District of Conservation. I'm your host, Gabriella Hoffman. This podcast offers a sober examination into all things hunting, fishing, shooting sports, energy, environment, and the public policy surrounding it. And this podcast also specializes in original interviews that you won't hear elsewhere. Here's what I have for you today. March is Women's History Month, and while the holiday has some pretty negative connotations, I figure on this show, what we've done since I've launched this podcast is highlight women who I think are awesome. And this is not coincidental. Sometimes this just happens with guest interviews. But today's guest, Kathy Holman, I think really epitomizes a strong, empowered outdoor ranching influencer brand. And I much prefer Kathy's brand over what we're seeing called the Tradwife brand playing out on social media. And we're going to go into that. But Kathy and I first connected when we both appeared on my colleague Julie Gunlock's podcast, the Bespoke Podcast. I obviously don't have kids yet. I'm not married, but I was brought on to talk about the policy implications of the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act stripping funding for shooting sports, archery, and hunting across K through 12 in this country. And Kathy obviously talked about how her kids benefited from such programs. And so our friendship began there. Kathy came to our Independent Women's Forum gala. We connected. I met her and her really delightful husband. And I've long wanted to bring on Kathy to the program because I think she really does capture lifestyle brands really well. And I think she is a great example for women to follow and even men to follow too. But if you don't know Kathy's background, here's a little bit of it. She is a city girl from Milwaukee who went country all for the love of a cowboy. She now lives in the middle of nowhere, Wyoming, with 5 children, 2 dogs, 4 horses, a mini mule, a couple of steers and pigs, and is constantly changing number of chickens and cats. She began the Prairie Wife and Heels website in 2013 to offer her support for women, wives, and mothers. And now her message of living a life of grit and grace is for anyone. Get to know Kathy on the podcast today. Enjoy. Kathy, thank you so much for joining the podcast. I've been looking forward to this forever since we connected.
I am so excited to chat with you. Purely biased, I think you're so much fun. So I'm planning to have a good time today.
You are so much fun. And backstory, everyone, you may have heard this in the introduction, but Kathy and I became connected through a colleague of mine, Julie Gunlock, on her Bespoke podcast. And Julie brought me on, even though I don't have kids, I'm not married, but we were talking about kids in the outdoors, funding that was taken away from school archery hunting programs. And Kathy spoke eloquently about it and how her kids benefit. And we're going to talk more about that a little later. So our backstory is that we met when she came to our gala in DC. I met her and her dapper husband, the cowboy, as she calls him. And it was just such a serendipitous meeting, wonderful meeting. And I've stayed in touch with Kathy and now we're having her share her story. So Kathy, for those who don't follow you, talk about what led to you creating this brand called Prairie Wife, and also talk about your backstory. You weren't really into all this Western Wyoming free range type of lifestyle before. Is that correct?
Yeah, 100%. So as someone who gets long winded, I give you full permission to interrupt me and be like, come on, girl, get on with it. So I actually grew up in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, hardcore city girl. I joke that I had never peed outside until I was well into my adult years. And we didn't camp, we didn't hunt, like I rode my bike everywhere, public transportation. But my family was very poor. And the one vacation that we took was a family reunion in Cody, Wyoming, when I was about 12 years old. So I went there and I fell in love with it. And I said, this is where I am going to live. And my dad laughed and he was like, okay, city girl, like, I'm glad you're enjoying the vacation, but okay. Well, it came time for me to apply to colleges and I wanted to be a first grade teacher. So really I could go anywhere. And because I was paying for it all myself, I chose the University of Wyoming because to me, if I wanted to marry a cowboy, which was the end game, that's where I should go and find one. So I got into the University of Wyoming and my parents were like, huh, okay, well, there you go. I didn't have any money to tour campus. I hadn't been back to Wyoming since I was 12. I was 17 at the time because I had skipped a grade and my parents running their own business. My dad could only take off 1 day of work to fly in with me and help me open a bank account and fly out. And that's where my story in Wyoming started. I'm a University of Wyoming cowboy. I met my now husband at the beer tent at Frontier Days, which Cheyenne Frontier Days is the daddy of them all, the world's largest outdoor rodeo. So really, it was a very fitting spot to meet a cowboy.
That's so amazing. And funny you mentioned Cody, Wyoming. Actually, my first trip to Wyoming was to Grand Teton and Yellowstone. But when I went to Cody, this is funny, and you'll appreciate this. We were going to film about bear conservation efforts. And we were meeting my friend who runs the American Bear Foundation, used to be called the Western Bear Foundation. So we were in the parking lot, and I think it was Sportsman's Warehouse or something like that. And my friend jokes about this. My videographer jokes about this to this day about a missed opportunity. There was a really cute game warden who wanted to talk to us, to me specifically. And I feel like I missed up my chance to talk to him 3 years ago.
I bet, like, you know, people usually come to Wyoming and stay. I bet we could find him. And we always joke.
I didn't know if he was married, though. So I didn't want to, like, broach the subject. But he was, like, trying to talk or maybe be nice. And me being oblivious, sometimes, like, that just happens. So I thought that was funny to mention that there. But yes, there are some very dapper, very nice men out west. And no surprise that you landed a good one yourself.
Well, and I joke that Wyoming is what America was. And I actually, I was 19 when I met him, and we dated for 3 years before we were married. And during that time, I definitely had a lot of adjustment. In Milwaukee, it was when you went on dates, you paid your own way. I'm a strong woman. I can do these things. And this was in the late 90s, the early 2000s. And I remember being upset because he refused to let me pay. He was opening doors for me. And I'm like, I can do this. Like, I can open my own door. And he's like, it's not because I don't think you can't do these things. It's because I respect you and I want to care for you. And that was a big pivot in thought process for me. And I joke now because I'm dear friends with my mother-in-law. We've been married for 20 years now. And at the beginning, it was a little rough. And looking back, I can understand, because here's her fifth generation cowboy son, grew up riding broncs. They grew up in the Cody area. He was a construction worker at the time. And he's dating this girl that's sitting there at Thanksgiving talking about, my children will never have pretend guns. And we don't need to have guns. And all of this thinking that I grew up with in Milwaukee, because my friends, you know, I had a guy whose brother was shot in a drive-by. And to me, food, you just got it at the grocery store. It just wasn't on my radar in that so egocentric way that we get, right? We think the way we live and the community we live in is the only way to live in, whether that's a rural one or a city one. And we get caught in that. And so I appreciate her giving me the chance to be educated, because I soon realized that there is a purpose for guns. So this is how we feed our family now, is elk hunting and antelope hunting, and how many, many families, you know, feed and provide is through having firearms. So there just were, through that 3 years of dating before we got married, there were just a lot of thought processes that I shifted, and I realized, wow, it's not black and white. There's so many gray areas. Maybe in Milwaukee, you don't need to hunt to provide for your family. It doesn't make sense maybe for you to have a gun, but here it absolutely does. I mean, I've saved my children because there's been rattlesnakes in the yard that I've had to shoot. Yes, I could have beat them with a shovel, but it wouldn't have been as quick and easy.
I hate rattlesnakes, so I don't blame you for wanting to do that.
Yeah. And they're here. Like, that, this is the life that I lead.
Would you say that is where the Prairie Wife brand built from, or came from?
100%. Yeah. So backtracking a little bit, when we were first married, we lived right in the middle of the city in Cheyenne, which it's one of the two largest cities in Wyoming. Now, keep in mind, our two largest cities are around 50 or 60,000. Okay. So just to, you know, for Wyoming, it was the big city, but for the rest of the world, it's a suburb. And we moved out to what I call the middle of nowhere, Wyoming. We have about 10 acres in Wyoming. I would never refer to this as a ranch, ever, ever, ever. People would laugh at me. They would boo and hiss. But to the rest of the world, like, when my family would come to visit, they're like, it takes 30 minutes to get to town. What? But For Wyoming, that's nothing. So moved here. I had a 3-month-old and a 2-year-old at the time. And for 9 years, my husband was gone 5 days a week for his job, which again, in Wyoming, pretty normal to have those big gaps where your spouse is gone. And as I would share the adventures of living out on the prairie, breaking ice for the horse trough, haying horses in the morning, and with the Wyoming wind, like the hay gets everywhere, shooting rattlesnakes, going a week without hot water, things that are just kind of normal in Wyoming because of the rugged landscape and where we live, I would share them on my social media and say, oh, I earned another Prairie Wife badge today. And it was just my way of, you know, instead of a Girl Scout badge, it was a Prairie Wife badge. And it was just my way of making light of the situation, because otherwise I would just curl up on the ground and cry and never get up again. And my friends from the East, from the city, from Milwaukee, were just captivated by this. So between the desire to share my way of life with other people, because I love it so much, and also the desire to find connection with other people, because I was a newer mom with no friends. I didn't know anyone when we moved here, and Wyoming can be really isolating. That's where the Prairie Wife in Heels brand began. And it started as a mommy blog. And after about 3 years of just doing that with no intention to monetize, I was just writing, sharing my stories. At that time, I had 4 children. I have 5 altogether now. It just kind of took off. And I started doing guest appearances on our local news station. That led to an opportunity to do guest radio shows, just talking about parenting and my perspective as a city girl gone country, and just sharing the funny stories and adventures. And after being a guest, they offered me my own radio show. And at the time, my youngest kiddo, number 5, was about ready to go into preschool anyway. So I said, sure, no problem. So I actually had the My Country Morning Show. It was me and a co-host for a little over 4 years here at a local radio station. And throughout all of this, you know, I was building my social media presence and doing podcasts and continuing to write articles and be a freelance person, and just kind of developed the Prairie Wife brand into what it is today, which I just refer to myself as a media personality.
I think I much prefer your style of exuding like the wife lifestyle over this. I don't know if you've seen this, but this trad wife trend and this whole instance that you're only a good wife if you know how to make sourdough bread. And I'm like and I'm like,
oh my gosh. So can I just say something?
Yeah, please, of course.
In defense of women and wives everywhere. Okay. So through my almost 18, I can't even believe it. My oldest is going to be 18 in 2 weeks. It's fine. We're not going to cry. Through my 18 years of parenting, I have been a working mom. I was a first grade teacher until our second child was born. Okay. I have been a stay-at-home mom. I stayed home for almost more than a decade. I was working on the Prairie Wife blog from there, but I did not have an official job for a decade, 11 years. So I did stay-at-home mom. And then I did part-time working mom. And now I'm small business owner mom. And you can't win. Like, you cannot win. When I stayed at home, what do you do? And when I worked, you cannot win. So just do what works for your family. And that's going to change. It worked for me to stay home when I was having a baby every 2 years and in diapers and newborn. It doesn't work anymore. My kids are gone all day. I wanted something to do. Just do what works for your family and don't get stuck in a hole. And I do probably 90% of the cooking and cleaning around here. And I don't think that makes me a trad wife. That just makes like my husband's out making money and I'm literally at home. What am I going to do? Wait till he comes home and make him clean when I'm here? That's not a good partnership. And when I'm gone and have an event, he takes care of the kids. He does the cooking and cleaning that day. He makes sure the laundry gets done. Like,
you're a lifestyle brand. And I feel like a lot of women who've either been on the show or women I know in the industry, whether it's in the ranching, hunting, fishing, like they do this really well. Like they epitomize the wife and the mother aspects of their lives really well without being cringe and saying like, we can do everything. And that should be showcased a lot more than whatever this iteration of trad wife or whatever trend that is. So that's why I'm like, women are so multidimensional and they don't have to be caricatured in this like bizarre, like cooking in a dress with
and also
bread.
If you want to do that, like, okay,
by all means,
Like, it never bothered me when I was a stay-at-home mom that other people didn't value or understand what I was doing. Because when my husband would come home on the weekends and the house was clean and there was food and all he had to do was just be present for our kids who he'd been away from for 5 days, that brought me a sense of pride and he valued that. And again, I just want to encourage women, like, you can't have it. You can have it all, but you can't have it all right now. There's one writing I have on the blog where and it was definitely a core moment for me as a woman, wife, and mother, where I was driving back home. My kids went to preschool, you know, like I said, half an hour drive. So driving kids, drop them off to school. I had a toddler screaming and a newborn baby screaming in the car. And I'm driving home and I'm watching this woman just like jogging down the sidewalk with her ponytail going. And I just cried because I was like, I'm never, ever going to be able to do that ever. But now I'm training for an 18 miler in the Bighorns. I've run 3 half marathons because my kids are older and I can do that. But you know what? I freaking miss the smell of a freshly bathed toddler and the crinkle of footy pajamas and a fresh diaper as they're snuggling you and giving you kisses, right? So like big picture of my life, I do have it all. I had the babies and I had that time but you can't do it all at once and you're going to implode if you try. And that, going back to the Prairie Wife brand, is what I try and showcase. Half of my Facebook videos and lives are no makeup. I'm wearing the same hoodie I was wearing in the picture I posted yesterday. I'm wearing sweatpants. I make sure that I show like, yeah, you know what? I had 3 events where I emceed and I was glam and wearing 6-inch heels and a floor length designer gown. But here's a picture of what my bedroom looks like because I haven't even put laundry away from last week, right? Like that's the whole basis of the Prairie Wife brand, is just helping support others to lead a life of grit and grace. And that means showing the good, the bad, the ugly. I have definitely wept in videos that I've posted. I've been mad. I've been joyous. I've been sad, like everything. And that's what I strive to do, is just showcase like, hey, this is who I am. This is how I'm leading my life. Take it, leave it, feel good about yourself because your bedroom's trash too, or feel good about yourself because you would never let it look that way and you're doing better than me, right?
No, I think it's a more positive brand. And I'm not saying this because we're friendly and we know each other now, but I feel like that's what women should be showed. Like you could do it all. And especially, like I said, going back to this point, outdoor women know how to show and how and prioritize balance. Like whether, yeah, like I said, you're ranching or you homestead or whatever, like it's a lot more healthier of an image to project than what we're seeing from some of these toxic elements of social media. And it's
agreed.
It's terrible. It's good bad for women and men.
Good enough.
So Kathy, I want to go back to one of the first things that we connected on. You were really adamant as you kind of made this, I wouldn't say transformation, as you got to accept kind of this Western culture of gun toting and ranching and providing for your family and your food. You wanted your kids to grow up in that. And when we first connected, as we alluded to earlier, you talked about your kids going through these school archery and hunting programs. And since we last spoke, actually funding was miraculously restored. How important is it for kids? And like I said, I don't have kids right now. I have nieces and nephews. And I hope to get married, have kids one day and get them yoked into these same programs like I was when, or not programs, but like same activities, because I didn't get to have school archery or hunting. But kids these days, I feel like I'm a millennial, but I see like the Gen Zers and the kids coming behind them. They seem so lost and confused. Not every kid, but a lot of them seem very lost. There's always this talk of mental health issues.
Yeah.
Them being stuck like in their apartments or you know, inside all the time. And now you see movements like 1,000 Hours Outdoors, which I think is a great movement. I see your postings. I see my other friends who are moms and wives, and they're getting their kids to touch grass, to do ranching, to go hunting, to go fishing. How important is it for kids to be outside in these days with these distractions, with these mental health issues looming, with social media being omnipresent? What advice do you have for people?
So first of all, just to reiterate again, I have 5 kids. The oldest is about to be 18 and the youngest just turned 9, 3 boys and 2 girls. And as someone who has a degree in education, I was very adamant from the beginning. We've always limited screen time. Now, of course, when I had a newborn baby, I'm like, watch as much Disney as you want. Like, I'll see you in 3 weeks. Here's your Cheerios, right? So it's all about balance. But it is our job, I think, as parents. My goal is to build strong, resilient children of good moral character that will go out as adults and put good in the world. And in order to do that, I think they got to eat a little mud. I think that you have to push them past their comfort zone so they realize they can do more than they ever knew. I feel like when you have a child who is in school all day, they come home, they sit in front of their phone or they play video games, and then they eat dinner in their room, and then they watch TV and they go to bed at 11. Where in there has been an opportunity for them to get outside of their comfort zone, to get hurt, to learn how tough and strong they are? There isn't one. So then when something happens that you can't protect them from, let's say their girlfriend breaks up with them, right? They have never experienced discomfort and learned that feeling that I know I can get through this and this will end. And so therefore they have no coping mechanisms mentally, physically. They don't know how to talk about it because it's never happened, right? If all they're doing is just coming home, not interacting with people, or maybe they participate in sports, but you're always making sure that it's never their fault. It's the team's fault if they lose, and you're just protecting them with the best of intentions, probably, from any negative emotion. There comes a point you can't do that anymore, and these kids just crumble. And so I feel that letting my kids and kids in general go outside and play is the best way to teach them to move through discomfort. Because also there's a certain amount of time, let's say they get hurt in your yard, and I'm like going like this because my yard's like out the window here. They get hurt in their yard, no matter what, they're going to have to take 2 or 3 minutes to come into the house and get you to help them. And during that 2 and 3 minutes, they're going to realize like, wow, I'm sitting here crying and my knee hurts and I'm bleeding, but I can still make it into the house. Right? So there's resilience with that. There's resilience in playing with your siblings and the neighbor kids and having to work an argument out because there's no adult hovering over you and watching you. And you're just going to figure it out. And you're going to go back out and play with that same kid that made you mad the other day because there's nothing else to do. Mom won't let you do anything else. So I guess I better just figure it out. And I think that there's resilience in making your teenagers go on a hike with you. Or for example, our family, we've got horses and we'll go pack into the backcountry for 3 or 4 days, no cell phone service anyway, even if you wanted it. There's rain, there's snow, there's thunderstorms. You're going up a 10,000 foot mountain with a horse in front of you and you have to hike behind it because it's too steep to be on it. You're packing all your food in, so you can't just eat whatever you want because you have to keep track of it. But also it's amazing because there's no distractions. You're laughing, you're playing with your siblings, you're fishing, you're laying out under the stars, telling the silliest ghost stories you've ever heard, right? There's just all sorts of resilience in that so that when you come back to the real world and you have a boss that's making you uncomfortable and telling you you can do this project and you have a deadline and you're scared, you know how to push past that and be successful. And I think we're doing our kids a disservice by not giving them that uninterrupted, guarded play because we're jumping in and we're saving them from everything. And there's going to come a point where you can't.
Building resilience is something that like my parents taught me, and maybe because I have a tough father, he's like, you can't cry. I taught you how to be strong and you can't cry anytime something doesn't go your way. And I don't cry very often, only sometimes. But he encouraged me to be tough, you know, to do these activities. First we started fishing. So there was no crying in fishing unless you lost a really big fish. That was the only time we were allowed to cry. But no crying.
Like, it's not even about crying, right? It's about crying, but doing it anyway.
Yes.
Like, right? Like, it's okay to be upset. It's okay to be hurt, but like, take a deep breath and
compose yourself.
You still got a mile to walk back to the car bunk. Yes. So like, what are you going to do, buddy? Like, we can do this. And then they just learn that mental fortitude. And hunting, there's so much confidence to be gained from knowing you can at the very like most primate like way care for yourself and get food.
Yes.
Like how many people now, if something happened as we saw during COVID and supply chains are cut off, like would you be able to care for your basic needs? If there was no electricity, if there was, no access to grocery stores, would you have any idea of how to care for yourself
or your family. And all my kids can say, yes, like we can, we know how to hunt, we know how to provide. And plus, like, let's be real, just the basic finances of feeding a family of seven. Thank goodness for elk. Thank goodness for deer. Thank goodness for antelope, because it really does help. And we have, you know, neighboring ranches that we help brand and do all that. So we have access to beef. We have chickens, eggs. We raise pigs off and on. There's something to be said too for my kids getting up at 5:30 in the morning and going to feed, even if it's 40 below, and getting those chores done before they get ready and go to school. They're going to know how to get up when they're on their own at college and take care of things. They're going to know how to get up for their job and take care of things. And there's respect that comes from that too. You know, finished these 10 cows off. You took care of these pigs from piglets all the way to the end. And in exchange, they are providing you with food and sustenance. There's just a respect for animals that I think people don't realize that. I mean, our ranchers are out there taking care of those animals no matter what the weather is like, no matter what's happening in their personal life. They are up every morning, afternoon, and evening to take care of those animals.
It's a hard life. And I don't think people in the cities, and granted, I've grown up in suburbia most of my life, but I've had an appreciation for farmers and ranchers. And I'm a little removed from farming and ranching myself because my grandpa did it. And he was a good farmer, you know, tortured through living under the Soviet Union and all that. But he was strong. And actually, him being a farmer allowed him to survive the worst things imaginable that people would never be able to conceive in this country. So farming and ranching can even help you survive the worst human conditions possible. But people really don't know what goes into the food. They really don't know what goes into sourcing meat. And I want to talk more, Kathleen, about your recent hunt. You recently went mountain lion hunting. I know some people listening may be balking at this notion. What? She killed a cat. Like, why would she do that? But there is a science and there is a need to do this because
it's
this
part is of the wildlife management.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So briefly talk about that hunt and why did it garner so much attention, especially on your Facebook feed?
I know. And I didn't, I didn't even expect for it to be as big of a deal as it was. So while I have ridden along on many elk and deer hunts, I myself have never killed anything because we're killing for what we need to eat. So my husband and my kids are taking care of that. Like, I don't need to shoot something just to shoot something. But one of my friends, I was talking with her about this really cool vest she had. And she's like, oh yeah, it's from a mountain lion I shot. And I'm like, that sounds amazing. And here in Wyoming, hunting mountain lions is part of our wildlife management. I know in some places they're a rarity, not in Wyoming. And so we have a limited number of licenses. And as a Mother's Day present, my husband got me a mountain lion hunt. And in true prairie wife fashion, I just wanted to do it. I didn't really research it. So it wasn't until later that I realized how actually dangerous a mountain lion hunt is. I just wanted to do it. And I used my platform to showcase all the steps of being an ethical hunter. So for example, I spent weeks practicing with the rifle that I was going to use, both indoor and outdoor, so that I could make sure I had a clean kill. I made sure that I was in shape physically so that I could get to where I needed to be at the right amount of time and not stress out the animal. And then we also hunted with hounds, which I did not realize this was a controversial way to hunt.
It shouldn't be though. People hunt with hounds here on the East Coast all the time.
I had no idea. That is actually why the video I posted of my hunt went so crazy, is because there were so many people that were upset. They called it cheating that we used hounds to tree the mountain lion. In my opinion, animals and humans working together is a thing of beauty. So by their standard of saying using an animal to hunt is cheating, I guess my husband riding and packing in on horseback for 50 miles to do his elk hunt, that must be cheating as well, because he's using the horse to get to where he wants to go to hunt the animal and have closest access to the animal. And I guess if you're a purist then, and you think you shouldn't hunt with animals, in my opinion, then you should start walking from your home to go wherever you're going to hunt. No driving up to the trailhead and leaving from there, because that's cheating too, I would think. Little sarcasm there, but it really upset me. Like, if you don't like it, move on. Definitely though, as someone that has over 50,000 followers, I was more than happy to, in a way that I think represented myself well educate people on the fact, like, that's your opinion and I understand that, but I actually did hike over 2 miles in 14 degrees with 40 mile per hour winds. We had a side-by-side, but you can't really drive a side-by-side up the side of a mountain. Still got to hike with your rifle. So we used hounds. It was one of the craziest things I've ever done in my life. One of the scariest things I've ever done in my life. I've never been told so many times, if you don't do this right and kill it with one shot, you could die. But thankfully, because of all the practice and everything like that, I was able to, get the mountain lion. He got away from us twice. It was a 7-year-old male. Again, ethical hunters are not going to shoot a cub. They're not going to shoot a female. They're going to make sure that, you know, it's a good sized lion, and I'm an ethical hunter. So he was about 7 years old, 140 pounds. We got him treed at last and running and slipping and sliding on the ice and the snow and knelt down and got him with one shot. So it was exciting. It was exhilarating. Yes, we are going to be eating him. We haven't had time yet because all 5 of my kids are wrestlers. So we've been busy with wrestling season. So I'm just really grateful and thankful. There were thousands of people that were congratulatory and maybe like 200 people that had a problem with it. So maybe that's another recommendation from this podcast, is just to kind of keep that perspective as a person. And just my personality, I hear the negatives and the criticisms on the things I post a lot more than the positives. But in the end, I think there were like 6,000 likes on the post and legit like 200 angry faces. So keep on spreading your word and your lifestyle and what you're doing, and don't worry about the people that don't get it. It was something that was reiterated to me yet again with that hunt.
I thought it was artful and tasteful because you weren't showing any gory commentary or pictures or blood and gore. And we long defend here on the podcast, I've long defended predator management or hunting the big game, because it is an essential part of the North American model of wildlife conservation. If you don't manage smaller, you know, several individuals, the population balloons out of control. And I don't know, Kathy, if you're following, Colorado, your neighbor, is going to soon possibly ban mountain lion hunting.
Which is insane, because there's so many of them.
Yes. And they're not endangered in a lot of these Western states. Like California, my home state, put a moratorium the year before I was born in 1990. And I have heard and seen far more mountain lion deaths from third-hand poisoning or them ingesting, you know, this poison from golf courses. And I'm like, if hunting would have been allowed still in California, very few individual mountain lions would have been taken. You would see far fewer deaths from this secondhand, third-hand poisoning, and you'd have a far more robust cat population. But they're so ridiculous that they prefer to virtue signal and say, oh, no, hunting is so bad. And yet you're seeing more deaths of mountain lions from greater industrialization.
Yeah, in terrible ways. And that was one of the things I showcased too, is like, there's pictures of the game warden taking the samples so that they can check on the cat and keep track of the genetics. Like, there's so much science to it that people don't respect. And I have to say too, it never occurred to me that a female hunting was a quote unquote problem for some people, because my husband has always supported me coming along. He takes our daughter hunting all the time. It just is a way of life here. But one guy told me to get back in the kitchen and make sandwiches.
No, I was serious.
And they're like,
why can't we do both? Make the sandwiches and go hunting.
Well, and I was like, I kind of was like, I did go home and make dinner that night. but like, one of the things that just surprised me is so many people that were indignant were like, and it's even worse that it's a woman that killed it. And I'm
ridiculous. Oh,
okay.
You know, thankfully those are far and few between nowadays, because like, women are now more normalized in hunting. And my dad always told me, he's like, don't let anyone prevent you from doing these activities. And he's like, don't listen to these people. If they don't want to carve a space for you, you carve a space for yourself. And it's not like a hate men type of thing. No way. It's actually the quite opposite. A lot of men have been very receptive that I've encountered. I know some people I know may have not had the most positive reactions, but I would say for the most part, most men are very welcoming of women in hunting and fishing. Those who aren't, they get out of the sport eventually, and then they can go on their merry way and pester someone else, or, you know, bother in that respect. But they're thankfully becoming more endangered as a breed.
Well, and in Wyoming, we just have, I mean, it's the equality state, right? But also I have found that in Wyoming, even the good old boys are respectful of women because their wife was out there alongside them in the ranch when it was 40 below saving calves during calving season, right? Like they're in Wyoming, you've got to have that partnership between men and women. That's how we've survived out here because it can be rough. It can be rough and it definitely takes a special person to live in Wyoming, but when it gets in your blood, oh man, it gets in your blood. And it's pretty amazing. And I can think of no other place I'd want to raise my children, even though I know many of them probably won't stay here because it's just not their thing. I know that they're better people because of being raised here and that they'll be successful wherever they go because of the lifestyle they've led.
Kathy, as we round out the conversation, direct my listeners to where they can connect with you and follow you.
Yeah. So where it all started is prairiewifeinheels.com. That's my blog where you can find written articles going back a decade. I've been doing it for 10 years. So you can find all sorts of stuff. It has an amazing search bar at the top. So you can put in any topic. There's recipes on there, everything, parenting, stuff about being a blogger. And then of course, pretty much every social media site you can find me, Instagram, Facebook, X, used to be Twitter, YouTube. I'm not on very much just because I prefer to do shorter length videos on the other social media rather than longer ones, but really just Google Prairie Wife and I should be right there on the first page.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Kathy, for such a fun conversation. Everyone follow her and let's do this again sometime soon.
Fabulous. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to District of Conservation. If you enjoyed what you heard today, go leave us some reviews on Apple and Spotify or wherever podcasts are played. Your feedback will help us reach more people, and I love to know what is on your mind after each episode. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter to never miss a beat or a guest announcement because that is our way of updating all of you listeners, and we have just hit 1,000 followers on Instagram for the podcast account. Thank you very much. And if you have any guest suggestions or topics you want to hear on the show, I'm all ears. I would love to hear your feedback there. Thanks for listening and stay tuned for the next episode.